KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want next time.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. He doesn't claim.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, it seems the always crazy TV business has finally lost it altogether. We'll try to make sense of this madness with veteran TV business journalists Joe Adalian and Michael Schneider. Plus, the cinema, the stars, the snow, the deals, a look at the upcoming Sundance Film Festival with head honcho John Cooper. Stay close, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
The whole first segment of today's show is really an extended banter about the TV business. You can hardly have missed the headlines. The Leno debacle, the big fight over whether Time Warner Cable would pay to carry Fox, the advent of 3D TV. All these stories are ultimately linked to the fact that the TV business is fighting for its future. The viewing audience is scattering, and so are advertising dollars. After all, there are so many options these days, and if you're a TV executive, how scary is that? Today we've brought in a couple of guys who really have their fingers on the thready pulse of the TV business. Mike Schneider is TV editor of Variety, and Joe Adalian writes the TV Mojo blog for TheWrap.com. Naturally, we start with the fiasco at NBC. It looks like Jay Leno will be back at The Tonight Show and Conan O'Brien is the odd man out. Obviously, NBC is dealing with the same problems that afflict the industry as a whole, but the credit for the current situation at the network really goes to Jeff Zucker, NBC Universal's embattled president and CEO. Let's start with the always diplomatic Joe Adalian.
While the conventional wisdom and probably the correct wisdom is that he's an idiot in how he's managed all of this.
Conan's reps.
In his mind, and there's also a point here, he's actually brilliant because what he's done in this last 5 years is 5 years ago, Conan O'Brien and his people said, we want The Tonight Show. You don't need to have it right now, but we want The Tonight Show. If not, we're going to go. If Zucker hadn't come up with that solution 5 years ago, it could have been very well that Conan O'Brien would have gone to another network 5 years ago.
Zucker definitely is to blame for part of this, but there are other complacent parties as well. I mean, let's face it, Jay Leno in first agreeing to this scenario 5 years ago and trying to be the good corporate citizen as opposed
right.
to saying, guys, I'm number one and I've been number one. So if you don't like that, then, you know, I'm not going to go with this.
Well, let's look at the big picture now. NBC, is in the process of being acquired by cable giant Comcast, and that is likely to bring with it some tremendous changes.
I think, they extended his deal another couple of years. That was all about sort of we got to maintain sort of someone at the top as this process goes on. And at some point, Zucker gets a nice payout if they do make a change, which I think everyone thinks is going to happen.
And I think that is likely to happen too. I think this next year is all about turning around or getting as much momentum at NBC as he can.
But he has had years.
But the thing is, if he can go in at the end of this year and show some momentum and show, hey, I'm not such an idiot and here's what's going on, then there's a chance that they'll be a little cautious. Okay, the people in Philadelphia who run Comcast are not wild and crazy. They need to get Jay Leno out of primetime as soon as possible because even though they won't admit it, they know it didn't work. It wasn't a complete disaster.
They can't rebuild primetime at the snap of a finger.
Well, no, they can't. Of course not. But Jay Leno wasn't the reason their primetime was a mess. It was a contributing factor. You know, you could argue that one reason Jay Leno didn't work at all was because the shows from 8 to 10 were just, except on Tuesday nights, with The Biggest Loser, were just weak.
And if you're Comcast at the end of the day, you're not buying NBC to keep the status quo. I mean, bar none.
Right.
I mean, this is going to be their company now. So you make the changes.
And what are we going to see, you think, Mike?
In Comcast, NBC.
Yeah.
Well, you know, first off, it's the cable side that we're really going to be interested in seeing. You know, sort of how do they start putting things together? There's been a lot of talk about the sports properties, merging NBC Sports with the sports properties that Comcast already has. And down the road, what does that mean for the Olympics and everything else? Also merging some of the entertainment operations. And we're waiting to see now how it all shakes up with the executives as well.
Clearly, this Comcast acquisition of NBC is about cable, which is the big success story at NBC Universal.
Well, it's about content. This is about Comcast taking its amazing resources that it has in terms of distributing shows and now getting big content. You've for everything from Universal Pictures to NBC to all of that, they now have big brands and content, although it seems like Zucker is trying to get rid of all of those brands as much
right,
as possible.
Right. Well, and knowing that having that big pipe is not enough now that people can access that content
right,
through so many different means.
Right. They have to make it important to be a subscriber
right,
to their service.
You can't just own a cord going
into someone's
house.
So do they keep NBC as a broadcast channel? Are there still hits left in that bat, Joe?
Yes. For the short term, you'll see the networks stay where they are. In the long term, it's not going to matter. I was at CES last week before this whole Leno mess broke.
CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, where they show all the new toys.
All the gimmicks and gadgets and everything great. It was very clear that very soon, as this year or next year, it'll be very easy for Aunt Ida in Illinois to buy a TV set that gives her a screen that has every widget possible where you can download whatever you want easily. You know, how fast everyone adapts is the question mark. 5 years down the road, who knows if it makes sense to have a network of local stations across the country when you can just directly cut out the middleman.
And that's what the big regulatory issue is going to be. It's not going to be about them merging these cable assets because honestly, there isn't much overlap. It's going to be, and Congress is very keen on localism and you're going to have these different Congress people saying, am I still going to get my NBC affiliate, my station across
Southern
the country.
Exactly.
Okay. So that localism and the stations and the fate of stations and affiliates is going to be an issue. And by the way, with going back to the whole Leno Conan controversy, don't discount that was also an issue in keeping affiliates happy and not making sure that they don't make a ruckus.
I think, by the way, the affiliate thing has been a giant red herring. I think it's been a way of a distraction. They don't matter. Since when, I talked to one giant network executive about affiliates and he said, what I say to the affiliates when they complain? Blank you.
But
I
mean, the only reason why they matter this year is because of
Comcast
acquisition
exactly,
of NBC.
Right.
Otherwise, this wouldn't have been an issue at all. And they
really?
Could have used
That's
the affiliates.
I don't think I knew that.
So.
I kind of bought it when they were telling us the affiliates were unhappy and they wanted to keep it. You don't think they would have
kept
it on
the air? Well,
it's true.
Both are true.
We had no guarantee that the affiliates were going to actually preempt Jay. I mean, there's a difference
exactly.
between saying we're not happy with Jay and actually going in and getting rid of that hour because what are these stations going to do anyway? So NBC could have waited, but they didn't.
Right. That's
now, crazy. We've seen some big splashy fights, notably Fox versus Time Warner, about how much are we paying. The cable companies don't want to ante up more than they absolutely possibly have to for the programming supplied by companies like Fox. I guess this merger would go a long way towards settling that for Comcast for at least some content.
Well, we should talk about why this is important because, historically the broadcast networks have sort of stood by as all these cable networks get a dual revenue stream. They get money from advertisers, which
right.
everybody gets money from advertisers for the most part, except HBO and Showtime. And they also get them from the cable companies. Now
that means your subscription money that
exactly,
you pay to Time Warner.
Your $800 cable bill
that
you pay every month mm-hmm. goes to funding these networks that you see. Essentially, the broadcast networks want some of that money. The cable companies don't really want to give it to them. But the fact is they now see the light. They know they're going to have to do this. They know that the networks need this money if they're going to have any chance of surviving. The networks will get paid.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about an industry gone wild with veteran TV business journalists Joe Adalian and Michael Schneider. I don't want to belabor American Idol particularly, but it is the Death Star, right, Mike?
Right. It comes on and it steamrolls over the competition. CBS, because they have a slightly different demographic, slightly older audience, isn't hit as hard as some of the other networks. But this show comes on. It's like a Super Bowl every single week. The audiences are
even
still –
even with the supposed slip
with the,
in the
even
ratings.
With the decline. I mean, let's face it.
It was flat this year. So
Idol right. could be cut in half and it would still be considered a hit by modern network standards. So this show has a long way to drop before it's a problem.
So is Simon Cowell really canny, Joe, and getting that this may be the final season? Can it survive? I mean, what can there be
the
a TV
question
show
is
like
irrelevant
that?
Whether American Idol can survive because Fox isn't losing Simon Cowell. And if anything, Simon Cowell is pushing Fox to do what networks don't want to do, which is take chance. If a network has a hit, as we've seen with Jeff Zucker, it will ride it into the ground for as long as possible. It will sign multi-million dollar deals to keep the cast of Friends together, even if the show is awful and viewers are getting disinterested. What Simon Cowell is doing, and he's not doing it because he loves Fox, he's doing it because he wants to make more money, right. And he'll make more money because he will own this new show called The X Factor, which will debut in about 18 months. He is forcing Fox to take a chance on reinvigorating the idea of a music competition series with a new format called The X Factor.
What do you think, Mike?
Where Fox kind of wins out in all this is that it really is big events that are still going to drive mass audiences to the broadcast network. So if they luck out and they've got a Simon Cowell show in the fall, that's big. Idol still does okay in the spring, and then they've got their So You Think You Can Dance franchise in the summer. Their thought is three major franchises that carry us through the year. Then we pepper our network with other dramas that are decent and comedies and all that, and we're still a real broadcast network and we still get a big enough audience. It could very well work. It's you know,
now looking at,
you
know, I mean, Idol is obviously in that realm of a really a sort of an appointment. Even if you delay it, you still don't want to be watching it the next day. What about scripted though, Mike? Why don't we start with you? I mean, going back to the whole Leno thing, the genesis of that was that scripted programming is expensive. More and more people have DVRs. They're not watching at 10 o'clock. Can 10 o'clock scripted programming or primetime scripted programming be saved? And especially in broadcast?
There's sort of a renewed sort of feeling that scripted programming may be back a little bit. We're seeing these hit new comedies on ABC like Modern Family. We're seeing the success of shows like NCIS Los Angeles, and Fox just picked up a second season of Glee. NBC, now that they have no more Leno at 10 o'clock, is reinvesting in scripted programming. They just picked up pilots from David E. Kelly and
Hank
Bruckheimer, Steinberg and Jerry Bruckheimer and the like.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a hope that, you know, maybe there's still a place. And plus, when you see how well these shows are doing on cable, all these scripted hits that are coming out, that there definitely still is a place for scripted programming, and maybe there's even a renewed vigor that it's still necessary for broadcast TV.
The question is, you know, can the networks continue to pay for as much TV at a high cost level as they have? And the answer is absolutely no. The ad revenues are going down. They're going to keep going down. And there's the fragmentation is going to keep affecting ratings. So what you'll see is you'll see just as many, if not more, TV shows as ever. You'll just see them on twice as many channels and twice as many outlets. You'll see within the next 2 to 3 to 4 years the first YouTube hit. Someone will create a Friends for YouTube, and it won't.
How long will it be?
It could be 8 minutes. It could be 12 minutes. It could be twice a week. But you will find shows that everyone has to watch and download, and they'll be able to watch it on their TV just like you have now. But the networks will survive as the home of the really big, amazing shows. Big expensive shows, the American Idols, the ERs, the shows with the big talent.
And I think you're seeing with advertisers now, I mean, with the collapse of the ad marketplace and online, that they still need a platform, a broad platform to actually sell their wares. So they're concerned as well about the fate of broadcast TV. They still need it. And if you look at the upfront dollar intake, other than last year, as ratings go down at the networks, the prices for primetime 30-second spots continue to go up. So,
but that goes into the whole theory of do advertisers really need it? There are some people I've talked to on Madison Avenue and Ad Age magazine has talked about the fact that the whole mass advertising model is dead. The way to get people into things is to pay a celebrity $50,000 to tweet something or
other things.
Do we
believe this, Mike?
I'd like a piece of that, by the way.
I'm available.
I think that works to a certain degree. I mean, viral marketing is hot and people do that. But
look at Susan Boyle. Susan Boyle is the biggest example of viral marketing. You know, when you think about it, yes, she was on a TV show in the UK, but she became a worldwide phenomenon and sold virtually as just 50,000 less records than Taylor Swift this year in 6 weeks to become the biggest selling artist in America. And she only did maybe a handful of TV appearances. Why? Because the Susan Boyle show played out on YouTube.
Although you still had that absolutely, I think, essential launching pad on regular television in Britain.
Britain, yes. And by the way, she got covered a lot by local TV newscasts and newspapers and radio shows, et cetera. So there's obviously
–
it's all a media thing. But you don't need the big networks to make you a hit completely.
What about 3D TV? Where is that going to take us? Why don't you start with that, Mike?
It's amazing, but it's a gimmick.
Exactly. It's a gimmick. And are people going to want to – you know, as they're sitting in their kitchen cooking dinner, are they going to wear those glasses with the TV in the background? I mean, it sounds like it's cool. cool for certain events, but the idea of people regularly watching 3D TV to me sounds a little far-fetched.
Well, you're right. We're talking about how TV is going to become all these big events, and this is another way to eventize something. The future of television right now, Kim, is apps. In the same way your iPod and iPhone have apps, you will soon see your television screen have apps, and you will have your Vudu app, you'll have your Hulu app, you'll have all these different apps, and you'll just scroll through your TV screen and decide what you want to do. Your TV is going to start looking like a computer screen, and it's not going to cost a lot of money. And by the way, you don't even need to buy a new TV set to get this. The new Blu-ray DVDs players, which are now $150, $200, can be enabled with this. And that's going to make it easy. In the same way that apps made it easy for people to do all these things easily on their iPhones, you'll now be able to do all these wacky internet things that have been available for many years on TV through the internet. You'll now be able to do it easily.
This is a guy who's been to the Consumer Electronics
exactly.
Show. You know what I'm saying?
I've seen the future.
I'm going to use that Vudu app that you talked about to start poking Ryan Seacrest.
I just wonder how you guys react to this whole thing. I mean, I find myself feeling almost like a dinosaur lady because I think, God, I miss three broadcast networks basically where it was really simple to figure out what was on the air and what to watch. And the change is so stunning and it's all so confusing. I see you winding up there, Joe. Do you guys feel like, what the heck is happening? Or do you have nostalgia for the good old days?
A little bit, sure, but it's all the media world. I mean, I miss going to a record store and browsing through CDs. And I miss, you know, people who just, you could spend a few hours on a Sunday reading the New York Times, and some people still do, but newspapers are dying and disappearing and morphing and changing. TV's not going to be any different. The fact is, if you really look at it, we're sort of in a golden age for television. If you're a fan of visual entertainment delivered to your home, you can choose from the crappiest, sleaziest, most outrageous reality shows you would ever hope to see and connecting with real people doing wacky things, or some of the best TV shows that have ever been. There have been so many great TV shows during the last decade alone. You know, it's confusing. There's so many shows out there you can't keep up with them, and you feel sort of like a pop culture moron if you have not seen The Wire, or if you're not watching, if you haven't already seen Life Unexpected, which is a new CW show that hasn't even premiered yet, but you should have already seen it or watched the online clips of it. So yes, it's overwhelming, but it's change. And the good news is, especially for people in Hollywood, there are a lot of people who still want to watch what Hollywood has to offer, a lot of platforms, and we're going through this whole process of sorting it all out and how do we pay for it. And it's people are going to lose some jobs, and people who expected that they could always make lots of money are going to be wrong. At the end of the day, content wins.
What about you, Mike?
Like
me?
you remember that Bruce Springsteen song, 57 Channels and Nothing On?
Yes, that's pretty much where it is.
I've got a TiVo, and I've got 57 shows on my TiVo that I want to watch. I just don't have time to watch. So
oh, really?
At least things have changed in that I think it's easier now to find the content that you want. There's a lot of great content out there. And it's much easier now to be entertained and not have to go through sort of the chaff in order to get to the good stuff.
That's true. I do love my DVR.
Right. Do you really want to be back in a world where the only thing you could watch on a Tuesday night was Coach?
Well, and to bring it all back together, back to Leno for a second, NBC was going through that. That was some outmoded thinking in putting Leno at 10 o'clock and thinking that was going to be everyone's second choice. You know what? People are going to watch their dramas first, but if they can't find anything on, they're going to watch Leno at 10. Well, no, turns out people have their TiVos or there's cable dramas on. There's too much good stuff.
There's internet surfing.
So Leno was never going to be anyone's second option at 10 o'clock.
And it's exactly right in terms of separating out the chaff. Chaff, whatever it is, you know, you can't be mediocre anymore and really survive.
Joe Adalian writes the TV Mojo blog for therap.com, and Michael Schneider is TV editor for Variety. Thank both of you so much.
Gracias.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to have a TV party tonight.
All right.
We're going to have a TV party, all right.
Tonight.
We got nothing better to do. Watch TV and have a couple of brews.
We'll be back in a minute with John Cooper, the director of the Sundance Film Festival. The action in Park City begins on Wednesday. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. We'd love to know what you think. Write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com or go to the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. The big hit to emerge from last year's Sundance Film Festival was Precious, which won the Audience Award and the Grand Jury Prize and has gone on to critical acclaim and box office success. As this year's festival gets underway, film fans are waiting out in the cold to discover the hot film of 2010.
Highlights presents a view of films featured by the festival and some selected by your fellow audience members. The Films tab presents you with an alphabetical list of films that can be sorted by multiple criteria, like category or venue. Select these criteria with the drop-down menus provided.
We here are a little more curious about the business of Sundance, of course, which in some ways is a bellwether for the indie film business as a whole. Last year, while lots of money changed hands, there were no really rich deals, and sponsorship was down. So with money still tight in 2010, what will this year bring? John Cooper was appointed director of the festival in March of last year, though he's been around Sundance for two decades, most recently as the festival's chief programmer. So let's go to the basics. How many submissions this year compared with previous years?
We had pretty much the same as last year. There were 9,000 submissions total. About 3,000 of those are in the feature film world,
full-length movies.
Dramatic, yeah, full-length dramatic and documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a rise in about 1,000 in the short film category, which is where the numbers grew.
Is that because short films are cheaper?
Maybe so. I mean, maybe that's part of it. Maybe, over the years, people have seen that there are possibilities for shorts, online, and maybe that's spurring people into making them. I don't think anybody who makes a short film is really thinking about getting their money back still. I think they really think about their career and, and what it means to proving to the world that they can make films.
On the feature side, are we seeing dark films, lighter films? What are we seeing?
We're seeing an originality always of where the stories come from, like the need from the filmmakers, I think, to tell these stories is always in play here. When we went into the festival, we all agreed when I sat with the programming staff that we're not really going to think about commercial possibility. We're really going to go for excellence and originality. And, good and great sells well.
I noticed, like, glancing through this program, fewer starry vehicles that we've seen at Sundance in the last couple of years. Is that deliberate?
No, it's not like deliberate.
I mean, have you turned away some films with huge stars and said, thank you, but you're not quite there yet in terms of our standards?
Oh, of course. We turn away a lot of films with stars. Okay. We always do. We always did. It's a fickle business. Everyone wants to think that there's motivation behind this, but sometimes we just like films that nobody else likes, and that's okay.
Well, when you make those choices, is it sort of Japanese-style consensus, or do you get to veto sometimes?
I always can veto. I try not to, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I also know that I have a task at hand, which is finding, close to 120 films. And so it's not the John Cooper Film Festival where I pick my favorites, because that'd be a much smaller festival, probably.
So you have said to your staff, I know you guys like this, but I simply can't stand it and forget it.
I say that, and then I wait for them to argue. And then I listen to the argument. If they argue hard and I believe that they really believe in this film, then I back down and put it in.
I guess the big success story from the last year's festival was Precious, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I think when we last talked, we were really kind of looking forward and even, the impending Precious release and what that was going to mean to the industry, really.
Mm-hmm. And is there a movie like that in this group, you think?
That is a phenomenon of sorts. I think it'll be a different kind of phenomenon. It might be a film that actually has a self-distribution and has a real success story for itself. That might be...
That would be a game changer for the industry, right?
Yeah, game changers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what Precious did for me and why I was both nervous and excited to watch its progress was that it proved that there was an audience out there for this kind of film. That's all I really was concerned about.
You mean a very
about.
Challenging film.
Right. It's challenging. It's rigorous to watch. And it had everything going for it. So you couldn't really say, in the marketing of it, you couldn't say, well, if it would have just got Oprah behind it, it might have made it, because it had everything going for it. So if it didn't, if it wasn't successful, I would be very nervous right now, because I wouldn't understand our audiences any longer.
Let me just ask about the sponsorships. Are they back, or are they diminished this year at Sundance?
No, they're back. I'm reading that a lot of the you know, ambush marketers, which are called parasite marketing sometimes,
right.
But a lot of them aren't coming back because they were just, you know, they just spent a lot of money. It was straight up marketing money, not money that comes from a belief in an idea or any philanthropic activity.
Right.
I mean, our sponsors always believed in Sundance, you know, so if they still believe in us, we wanted them back. And it was interesting. They pretty much all came back if they could.
Now, you created the next category for films with budgets under $500,000.
Yes.
So what does that tell us about what Sundance has been and where it's going to be going?
We were seeing a lot of work that was done, being done low budget. A lot is possible now for people to make low budget films. You have to have a story and know how to tell a story in an interesting way. But I think that the audiences need to be maybe contextualized is the right word on what these, because they're going to look a little bit different than a big budget film. And I think there's a place for them. But I think that's why we're carving out a section where we kind of say these films are low budget. Let's look at them with that set of eyes on, and let's also let's hear their backstory and hear where they're coming from. I think that's an interesting, you know, part of what the film is.
I mean, could one break out and win the whole, you know, the biggest awards?
No, because they're not in competition.
Okay.
We're doing an award for them, which is a throwback to many years ago. We had a filmmaker trophy, which filmmakers voted, you know, for their own favorite film. They couldn't vote for their own, but they voted for their, you know, it's a peer vote.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have that for them so they can vote. We're calling it the best of next. So the next filmmakers can vote for each other.
Are you comfortable with the idea that Sundance is the bellwether for the indie film business?
If you really accept all the responsibility that people put on Sundance, you almost get frozen. And you have to sort of just put that out. Even with, I mean, right from the beginning, with the number of filmmakers that submit their work, that's, you feel a responsibility to them to really judge their work. I think if you just stay on mission, the industry will settle itself. The industry will continue to morph and change, and we're here to just kind of prove what can work.
John, are we expecting it to be as frigid as usual in Park City this year, or is the climate change going to have a warming effect?
I'm hoping that it's going to be very warm. No, I'm actually hoping it's going to be very cold and everybody goes into the theater. That would make me happy.
Instead of walking the streets looking for free stuff.
Exactly.
All right. Well, good luck on your first turn as head of the Sundance Film Festival.
Thank you.
John Cooper is the director of the Sundance Film Festival. After many years of service as the picker of films, the head picker of films, this year the mayhem begins on January 21st. Thank you, John.
And thank you very much. It's always a pleasure.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Darby Maloney is our associate producer. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Groman. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. If you have any questions or comments about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com. You can also listen to this or any past program or comment about the show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button from our new media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.